Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
Crimes Of is a weekly series that explores a new theme each season, starting with the true crimes that inspired Hollywood's most iconic horror villains.
Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to True Crime in Real Time, a roundup of crime news from Odyssey radio stations across the country. I'm your host, Lauren Berry. This week, we're covering news of a tip that reopened the 40-year-old disappearance case of Sherry Mahan, an 8-year-old girl who vanished from the driveway of her own home in Pennsylvania. We're also checking in on another Pennsylvania case that's currently under investigation, the murder of 23-year-old Penn State graduate Kaida Scott. Her disappearance was reported earlier this month after Scott left home to go to her overnight job at an assisted living facility and never returned. Her remains have since been discovered, and one suspect in the case has been arrested. But authorities are still searching for another. In Minnesota, we'll also get the latest updates on the Annunciation Catholic Church mass shooting that claimed 2 lives and injured many others in August. A girl who was shot in the left frontal lobe during the attack was able to go home this weekend in time for her 13th birthday. As she heals, so does the community shocked by this tragedy. We'll hear from the father of girls who witnessed the shooting and from a local lawmaker on efforts to improve safety moving forward. But first, we're headed to Pittsburgh. That's where KDKA Radio's Tamira Rush interviewed private investigator Steve Ridge, who's offering $100,000 of his own money to help find Sherry Mahan. Rush talked to Ridge about new developments in this case this week. The missing girl was last seen just after she got off her school bus in February of 1985, and she was declared legally dead in 1998. Now, a new tip has opened up the search for her again in Armstrong County, Pennsylvania. There, crews have been excavating a small plot of land in South Buffalo Township.
Talk to me a little bit about, okay, so we're hearing that there are new developments in the Sherry Mahan case. Were you involved or did you initiate or influence the recent excavation in Armstrong County at all?
The Armstrong County excavation was something handled exclusively by the state police and the FBI. I was not involved in, informing them or party to the actual excavation.
So what is it that when you see something like this taking place, did you hear of anything regarding this area at all?
Well, I had a tip here a while back that they were going to attempt an excavation at an undisclosed location. So I was very much aware that something was going to be coming. And I was familiar with that particular area because I know that earlier this summer, a drone was used apparently by officials to examine that same area, from the air. And in addition to that, it happens that I have had some direct tips from a variety of people that have suggested that both on that side and the other side of the Allegheny River in the same general location are spots that should be checked. So I was pretty well tuned in to the whole situation, even though I didn't know precisely when or where that dig would be.
Have you had any contact with local authorities or FBI or at all?
No, I have not had reason to at this juncture. We have a very good working relationship. I pass along to them anything that I get that I feel is substantive or credible so that they can use it at their discretion. We kind of have an arm's length relationship, and I think it's probably better that these things happen independently rather than if you're overly collaborative, it kind of defeats the purpose of having an independent private investigator who people do tend to trust more than local officials for some reason. So I like to maintain my independence, and that therefore, you know, I've gotten some real breakthrough tips that came directly to me, people that were reluctant to talk to officials.
And so at this particular time, what's your working theory on what happened to Sherry? And has it changed in the light of this recent activity at all?
No, it has not changed. I think we have a very solid direction in the case in terms of what happened, how it happened, who was involved, and probably some pretty good insight on potential locations for remains. So I'm pretty optimistic that we are on our way to an eventual solve of this case. After 40 some years, there just been some substantial breakthroughs that have occurred, and I've been pleased that I was able to get involved, because I did find people that wanted to talk who did not want to, you know, speak with police or local authorities or the FBI.
Yeah, that was my next question. What would you say to members of the public who may still have information but haven't yet come forward?
Well, I would encourage them to come forward. I'm a big supporter of law enforcement, and I do encourage people to come forward directly to them. But I recognize that people are fearful for a variety of reasons. Oftentimes, people think if they have knowledge or a tip to share that it may bring some scrutiny upon them if they come forward, and they're just generally untrusting and not sure. They're just reluctant to get involved. But people who have information frequently have a great deal of built-up guilt. This was the case with a gentleman who I identified who for 40 years kept quiet about what he knew because he had been threatened that his family would be harmed if he came forward, and he finally reached a breaking point and reached out to me directly.
So is the $100,000 reward still active, and how can people submit tips securely?
It's still very active. I would love to award a $100,000 check to someone. We need precise, location of remains and a positive identification in order to affect that. But I would love to do it, and that's why that reward is out there, is to provide the incentive to people to come forth and claim the prize.
Right. So from the last time I talked to you, I think it was sometime back in the summer, have you heard any additional tips that you're able to talk about?
Well, I can only tell you that I've had additional tips that have supported sort of my working theory on the whole thing, and I haven't disclosed, details of what that theory is exactly, or even identified people. There, some of the people that I surfaced and have identified, their names have been made public by other means, but I don't do that intentionally because I, want to avoid sort of leading the witness or what have you. I prefer to have things come in independently to me, but we're very well zeroed in on what happened, and I think eventually justice will be served.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money? Still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
My new podcast, Crimes Of, explores the forces behind some of the most unforgettable crimes in history. Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
In another part of Pennsylvania, Philadelphia officials continue to investigate the death of Kata Scott. Her remains were found last weekend, buried in a shallow grave. KYW News Radio in Philadelphia has been reporting on the case.
The Philadelphia Medical Examiner has ruled Kata Scott's death a homicide, a gunshot wound to the head. Scott disappeared on October 4th. Her body was found 2 weeks later in Germantown. Keon King, the man police believe is at the center of it all, has now been charged with her murder.
Here's more on the suspect from KYW's Kristen Johansson.
Keon King has been charged with kidnapping before, but in that case, the Philadelphia District Attorney withdrew the charges within a month of his arrest. With more, KYW Crime and Justice reporter Kristen Johansson.
The alleged incident happened January 13th of this year. Law enforcement sources say King went to his ex-girlfriend's home along 23rd Street near Berks three times. The first incident around 2:30 in the morning when sources say he climbed over a fence and tried to open her window and then kicked and pounded the door to get in, but left before police arrived. He came back 13 hours later around 3:30 in the afternoon, sources say, when again he tried to get into the home looking into windows with a gun in his waistband. Just about an hour later, sources say the victim and a friend left the home to run an errand when King jumped out, grabbed her, and pulled her into his car with his two-year-old allegedly sitting in the back seat. Sources say the friend tried to intervene, but he threatened to kill her. They say King drove the victim around, assaulting her, biting her face, and choking her, but he then let her out at 7th and Girard, and that's when she flagged down police to report the incident. Months later, in April, King was arrested, and prosecutors asked for $1 short of $1 million bail, signaling their belief he was a danger to society. A preliminary hearing was scheduled for late May, but according to court records, when the victim and witness didn't show up, the prosecutor dropped the case at the direction of the judge. The office did not refile charges until this week when they arrested King in connection with the disappearance of Kata Scott. Police believe the last person to see Kata Scott alive was her co-worker, who said Scott had just started her shift when she got a phone call, seemed upset, and said, "I can't believe you're calling about this," before walking off to a dark-colored car in the parking lot. 9 minutes later, detectives say Scott's phone went dead. Police say surveillance video shows that black car pulling into a back parking lot of the Aubrey Rec Center, which is next to the Ada Lewis Middle School in Germantown, only 15 minutes later. They say the video shows the car left there overnight, and the next day, a gold car with two people inside driving in, and they seem to carry something heavy out of a black car, presumably a body, and head to the wooded area where Scott's remains were eventually found. Police are working to identify that second person.
Court filings have also revealed more about the case.
According to court records, there were dozens of calls between Kata Scott and Keon King on October 4th, the day Scott went missing. The filing also reveals some texts. One Scott sent saying, "Kidnap me again," King allegedly replying, "Better be up to," by Scott telling him to call her when he got there. A co-worker of Scott's told Detective Scott was upset and said over the phone, "I can't believe you're calling me about this," and then walked towards a dark-colored car parked outside the nursing home in Chestnut Hill where she worked just before 10:15 p.m. Scott's phone then goes dead 9 minutes later. Detectives say King was at the rec center near the Ada Lewis Middle School in Germantown less than 15 minutes later, and they believe Scott was likely dead at that point. They say surveillance video shows King getting out of the black car, which was a stolen stolen Hyundai Accent and walking away. The next night, they say King drove back to the rec center in a gold Toyota Camry with someone else, and the two seemed to remove something heavy from the Hyundai towards the area where Scott's remains were eventually found. They say the pair is seen on video walking away, but then on October 7th, just before 3 a.m., they say King went back to the Hyundai and drove off, and about 45 minutes later, that Hyundai was found set on fire in West Oak Lane. As for that possible second suspect, authorities say they're still investigating.
In the meantime, authorities are also focused on charges against King.
King faces a slew of charges, including murder, robbery, arson, kidnapping, and gun offenses. Scott's murder has prompted city council to plan hearings on how the criminal justice system treats victims of domestic violence. KYW City Hall Bureau Chief Pat Loeb has more.
As the city of Philadelphia, I think we failed the young lady.
Council President Kenyatta Johnson called for the hearings to explore the policies by which charges were dropped in a previous domestic violence case against Kata Scott's alleged killer. He says the city owes it to Scott's family.
You got two city departments pointing fingers at one another. That's not going to bring any resolution to the family.
District Attorney Larry Krasner, whose office dropped kidnapping charges against Keon King, deflected blame by criticizing a judge for granting King bail, which in turn drew a furious rebuttal from the courts.
We're going to just look at overall our policies at a city and see what can we do better.
Scott's cousin has launched a petition on change.org to demand Krasner's resignation. The petition got 2,300 signatures in 3 days.
Friends, family, and community members came together for a candlelight vigil in memory of Kata Scott. KYW's Sonny Morgan was there tonight.
Kata Scott!
Dozens of people gathered outside of the Ada H. Middle School in East Germantown to pay their respects to Kata Scott, who was found behind the vacant building over the weekend. Kata's aunt, Donna, says her family asked for privacy as they processed this tragedy.
Just remember her name, remember her smile. Remember what she lived for. That's it. Just remember who she is.
State Representative Andre Carroll organized the vigil for Scott, who he connected with over the summer.
I got a chance to see her infectious smile and, you know, hear her very timid, shy voice. And, you know, so for a few months later to have the reality that, you know, her remains is found in the neighborhood where I grew up is hard to believe.
A photo of Kata was placed on a tree outside of the school, and candles were lit and placed under it. Councilmember Anthony Phillips, who represents the area where Kata lived, is collecting donations at his office to support her family, in addition to a GoFundMe her family set up online.
When 23-year-old Robin Westerman reportedly fired through Annunciation Catholic Church's stained glass windows during a start-of-school mass, she killed two children, aged 8 and 10, out of 200 in attendance. Others were also injured. This incident's impact has spread outside of the church walls and into the community. Anders Holin, the father of two girls who were at the mass, spoke to WCCO Radio's Adam and Jordana about this experience in August.
Yeah, I had just dropped the girls off. We walk up to school because they only live about two blocks away, and I was on my deck, just made a cup of coffee, and I heard what sounded like gunshots. You know, my heart sank, and I was hoping it was a roofer, but I had thought about what would I do in a situation like this, and so I just kind of put that plan into motion and drove up there as fast as I could. I was trying to locate where the shots were coming from. I called 911 on the way up. I saw a gentleman at his house, and I said, "Are those gunshots?" And he said, "I don't know." I pulled up to the school, and there was one person in the parking lot, a dad who's a building kind of maintenance manager. And I asked if the school was locked down. He said, there's a shooting at the church. And he said, "And all the kids are in the church." And my heart sank. And so I parked quickly, ran up there. And it was just a very chaotic scene. We were trying to figure out where the gunman was. The police were showing up at the same time as I was kind of approaching the entrance to the church. And it was very chaotic.
And you get to the church, Anders, and then what do you see? Do you go into the church and just tell me about the scene? And obviously this all plays out, and you want to help, and you're also thinking about your two kids, your two girls.
Yeah, I mean, at that moment, I was only thinking about them. I wanted to get into that church, and I was initially relieved that the police immediately entered, for a second, I'm like, I might have to push these cops in there because I'm not staying out here.
Yeah.
And there was no hesitation on the police. They were in immediately. And I was right beside them, behind them. And I was asking, where's the shooter? And kids were running out. Many were injured. There was a lot of glass. And so I think a lot of kids had these cuts. I saw a few kids down. It was an awful scene, but I was just looking for my daughters. Ran up to the principal, who was in the center of the sanctuary. I asked Arjun and Olive down, and he said no, and I ran out, ushering the kids along with me. It's hard to remember every detail, but it was a chaotic scene.
So did you get to identify your girls, or you just heard from the principal that your two are okay, and that's when you started helping the other kids out? Where were your girls in the mix of all this?
Yeah, I didn't know. And so I was just frantically searching, and I was helping kids out, ushering, like, you know, get it, let's go. And I was seeing a couple of my daughter's friends. Have you seen June? Have you seen Olive? Are they safe? And I was able to track down my first grader, Olive, quickly outside the church. My daughter June had run to Starbucks with her teacher. And I'm so thankful that the teacher just whisked her out right away once the gunfire started, but it took a couple minutes to find her. She had come back when she saw kids pooling out of the church, and I saw her, you know, maybe 5 minutes later, and the relief washed over me. And I helped kids and the whole group get into the gym at the school, which is maybe 200 feet to the west.
From someone now who has experienced this horror, what's that message? What do you want? What's the most important thing you want people to know?
Yeah, I mean, it's a hard question to answer, but I just feel like a lot of anger, a lot of frustration. I think seeing this through screens my whole life and then witnessing bloodied first graders, it's just the level of rage that I felt yesterday was unbelievable. And so I just want there to be something, you know, just something.
Yeah.
Some action, some progress. I feel like everyone's so entrenched that it's not doing anybody any good. And we just can't keep allowing this to happen.
U.S. Representative Kelly Morrison, a Democrat, also spoke to Adam and Jordana about the shooting this August.
What stands out to you, and I guess what is impacting you the most, and what are you hearing from people about what happened?
My heart is broken for the families, first and foremost, for our community, for the Annunciation community. There just aren't words. There aren't words. And, you know, I attended the vigil at the Basilica last night, and the Archbishop said that they're just, you can't conjure up words, but that music sometimes can help people heal. They had a beautiful interfaith service at the Basilica last night. There was an imam and Rabbi Zimmerman from Temple Israel and the Archbishop. It was really beautiful. I went from there to a vigil at a mosque in Coon Rapids that recognized the life of Melissa Hortman. That was just 2 months ago, you know. So we're traumatized here in Minnesota, I think. You know, I went to the vigil also at Lyndhurst Park the other night, the night after it happened, and spoke with some law enforcement officers whose officers are so impacted. You know, the ripple effects of these tragedies. I think about Dr. Thomas Wyatt at HCMC, who did such a stand-up job at the press conference explaining the trauma of the healthcare workers as they take in this mass casualty event. We have got to do something to prevent these tragedies from happening. I think that you hear again and again when this happens, we didn't think this could happen here. You know, you hear that expression across the country, and it's come here to Minnesota, and we need to get together and decide that we don't need to live like this anymore.
Well, it does happen here. It happens often here, which, I mean, you just cited two shooting events, which were devastating. Local officials are calling for an assault weapons ban. What is your reaction to that? Do you support that?
Absolutely. You know, we had an assault weapons ban in this country that was allowed to elapse in 2004, and the data suggests and supports that there have been more mass shootings using assault weapons just because it's so much easier to unleash a high volume of bullets very rapidly. That feels like a common sense solution. There's not going to be one policy priority that solves this problem, but we've got to start trying things. Our unwillingness to even try things. As a doctor, I really think it's important that we try to use the best available evidence when we craft policy. So we need to study gun violence more than we have so that we can make policy that we know works. But certainly starting with an assault weapons ban seems like a common sense.
You know, the pushback, though, there's plenty of people who say, look, these guns are owned by many, many, many people who use them responsibly, use them for purposes, whether it's target practice, hunting, whatever it is. Yeah. And they say there's another problem in this country, that the reason that the fact that people want to inflict this kind of harm on others, can't we start with that? What do you say to that?
Absolutely. We have a mental health crisis in our country. No one can deny that. And so we need to be putting resources also into studying that. What are the best practices to help our young people to lead productive and happy lives to avoid this kind of violence? You know, I think about the fact that gun violence kills more. It's the number one killer of children in our country. Dr. Mark Gorelick, the former CEO and a pediatrician himself of Children's Hospital, wrote an article in the paper. He's written a book about this, actually. And one of the suggestions is safe storage laws. So that doesn't infringe on anyone's right to own their weapon, but let's make sure that our guns are safe and away from our kids so that we don't have those tragic accidents either.
That wouldn't have helped in either of these incidents. That wouldn't have helped at the Annunciation Church. It wouldn't have helped Melissa Hortman. You know, it's wonderful to hear you say we want an assault weapons ban, but nothing ever happens. Nothing happened after Sandy Hook. And we sat here at the fair and said, you know what? We assume nothing is going to happen because that is our culture in America. It is gun culture. What is the problem in Congress that nothing happens? You guys are human beings also. You know, want kids to not get murdered in mass, in school. Why can't Congress get its act together and keep our kids safe?
I think the hyper-polarization that we're experiencing in our culture right now is part of that problem.
Throughout all of the chaos, one young girl miraculously survived a gunshot wound to the head during this tragic shooting. WCCO reported on her homecoming this week.
Sophia Fortus was shot in the head August 27th in that mass shooting at Annunciation Catholic Church and School in Minneapolis. Since then, her family has reported she's made steady progress. Her mother, Amy, and father, Tom, say her resilience continues to inspire them. They say Sophia is strong, brave, and unwavering in her fight toward healing. She left Gillette Children's Hospital in St. Paul this morning, where she was given a police escort with many others, including paramedics at HCMC, joining the procession to honor Sophia and support her in her healing journey.
According to CBS News, Sophia also stopped by Annunciation to see her classmates. Thank you so much for listening to this True Crime Roundup from Odyssey. This episode was written and produced by me, Lauren Berry. Special thanks to KDKA Radio in Pittsburgh, KYW News Radio in Philadelphia, and WCCO News Talk in Minneapolis. You can find these roundups by subscribing to the On Deadline podcast, the Who Killed Strawberry podcast, or the Bitter Academia podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
If you have a podcast and want to monetize it stress-free, you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. We'll host your podcast for free, and our experienced sales team brings in the advertisers and the revenue. Easy. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
My new podcast, Crimes Of, explores the forces behind some of the most unforgettable crimes in history. Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Radio Rental.
the scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house, something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.